Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. This is episode 24 of the Geek Speak podcast, and this one is being released on Thursday, but I'm recording it on Monday, as pretty much this entire episode is going to be devoted to the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con happened this past weekend from Friday until Sunday, and I had a lot of stuff to report from the New York Comic Con, which I'm going to report about on today's show. So I'm not really going to be talking too much in studio today. Most of it are reports that I filed and interviews that I filed, and it was a lot of fun, period. I'm really glad I got to go to this Comic Con full of a lot of comics, a little bit of anime, a little bit of manga, and plenty of great times. Got to meet plenty of great people along the way. Hung out with the Comic Geek Speak guys for a little bit. Hung out with Mike Norton for a little bit. Got to meet Paul Levitz and Todd Nock and Phil Jimenez. I got to say hi to him for a little bit. And got to sit in on plenty of great panels as well. And also met plenty of random nice people along the way. So I am not going to waste any time here. I'm going to switch it over to myself for the day one report, and from there it'll switch over to day two and then day three, and I'll have some comments to say afterwards. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode of Geek Speak. It was a lot of fun to put together, and again, apologies for not putting this out on Sunday like I said I did, but I got a lot more content at the con than I thought I was going to get, and it's pretty much an entire episode, so I figured why not just wait until Thursday and release it as a regular episode. So here you have it. This is my report from the New York Comic Con. Enjoy, folks. Hey, it's Ian Levenstein live here from the New York Comic Con. I am already overwhelmed. I just got myself my badge and my shirt, my glorious Serenity action figure, and I'm ready to start running around the con here. It's pretty crowded already, even though it's only about 5 o'clock on Friday, so I guess a lot of people just got out of work early and came on over, or those people who didn't have work in the first place came on over here. So anyway, I am going to check things out. I'm going to try and get some interviews and see what's going on, and hopefully you guys will hear it the next time I turn on this player. So stay tuned. You have to, because it's a podcast, damn you. All right, I'm here with Brian Diemer of Comic Geek Speak. Brian, what do you think of the show so far?
It's really impressive. A lot of people, a lot of stands. It's bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I can just imagine what it's going to be like on Saturday. I mean, today, obviously, a lot of people haven't even gotten out of work yet, and it's already packed to the gills.
Yeah, I'm almost afraid to come back tomorrow. I mean, the aisles are going to be like just sandwiched through, you know, standing room only the whole time. So, but that's a sign of a good show. I'm sure the retailers will make a lot of money, and I'm sure they're bound to come back next year.
You got anybody you're looking forward to interviewing or anything like that?
Yeah, I got a little bead on a guy who does something called Spawn. I don't know. So, you know, I might
something or other.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Right, yeah. Something with baseballs.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, something about Mark McGwire getting something or other. I don't know. Something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, steroids or something. I don't know.
Right.
And any particular panels that you're looking forward to?
Honestly, I don't know if I'll go to any panels because we have so many people we have to talk to at the show that I don't think I'm going to have time. I think some of the other guys are planning on some panels. I'm planning on schmoozing the whole time.
Speaking of which, I know that you're selling your shirts here. What's it like actually, you know, going into business at a convention?
Well, it's not the first time. With Crusaders, we had done it. We got, you know, trapped in a booth for three or four days in Chicago, you know, and so it's not exactly new. But this time, I think our product is a little better. You know, it's hard to go wrong with the T-shirt.
Yeah.
And so I'm very excited just to meet all the listeners. It's very cool.
And I guess one final question. Any upcoming things we should expect from CGS in the next couple episodes that you want to give away?
You know, honestly, well, we talked the next episode, which might even come out before you air this, but is Steve Bryant from Athena Voltaire. And then we haven't recorded the ones after that. So who knows who we'll be talking to based on, we'll have a show wrap up, you know, but hopefully we'll talk to some people and make some connections and have some more interviews coming up.
Flying by the seat of your pants.
Absolutely, the only way to do it.
All right, that's Brian Deemer. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Sure, thank you, Ian.
All right, I'm here with Mike Norton, the artist on Gravity and also Marvel Adventures Spider-Man. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little tired, but I'm making it.
So, what's the situation here at the con so far? Are you liking it?
I've only been here for an hour? So far, I'm just amazed at the foot traffic. It's really kind of busy. They say that it's been busy since noon, so that's pretty impressive. I'm actually just getting my bearings myself. I've only seen this one strip where I am. I've not even made it around the convention yet.
You've been getting a lot of fans coming up so far?
I haven't had a lot of like business come on, but I've already met a bunch of people already who just come up to look at stuff or have actually heard me on podcasts and stuff. They've already said come by to say hey. It's just the first day and first hour. That's pretty promising.
And speaking of the podcast, how do you think the podcasts have affected how many people know you and the business of your comics?
I'm already pretty impressed with, like, I guess the quote-unquote, like, marketing potential of these podcasts. I've just being on, like, Comic Geek Speak and the one I do for fun with my friend Crank and the other ones I've done, it's just... I guess I'm just pretty surprised at the number of people that have been listening, because they're here, you know, and they're coming to my table. So I wasn't expecting that, honestly. So it's been pretty cool.
I being one of those people. So there you go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When you walked up, I was like, I'm meeting people that I've never. I mean, I'm recognizing people that I've never met before, and that's really odd to me, you know. Because I've only seen these people on message boards or internet, you know. It's strange. I'm used to working with my friends over the internet, but I've met them before. So
what's upcoming for Mike Norton? What comic book should we expect in the future?
Well, I'm not sure which month it'll be. It'll probably be like April or so. The last issue of Howling Commandos, issue 6, I just finished up. And I'm starting a new run of Marvel Adventures Spider-Man with Peter David for later this year, so that's going to be pretty cool. And I'm working on an issue of Angel Spotlight for IDW, and that's a Spike and Wesley Windham Price story. So that's actually been pretty fun too, because I'm a big fan of that show. So
it's got to be amazing working with a creator such as Peter David, who's, you know, been known in the industry for so long now.
Yeah, it's so far. I mean, I'm only a couple pages into it, but it's been really fun. I've never read his scripts before, but they're quick and to the point. It's obvious this guy knows what he's doing. They're really funny too. I'm amazed at the jokes that he's putting in there, and it's still these Marvel Adventure stories are just classic Spider-Man. It's just more so than the actual book these days. So I'm having tons of fun doing it.
And considering how classic it is, what's it like being a part of, in some ways, rewriting history almost, you know, bringing these Stan Lee stories back to life?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because the Marvel Adventures line has kind of shied away from the retelling of the classics now. They're all original stories now. So there's still that classic feel to them. It's Spider-Man in high school doing his thing, but they're not strict retellings of stories that have come before. Either way, it's a blast doing it, because those are the stories that I remember. You know.
And I got to ask, any Gravity in the future?
I still don't know. I know that he's still getting around. I just saw that he's in the new Marvel Handbook, which was pretty exciting. So obviously, they're keeping him. You know, he's sticking. I just I don't know about a sequel series yet, or nothing. I've heard rumblings, but nothing that I can really talk about.
All right, well, there you have it. There's Mike Norton. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
Hey, folks. Well, day one of the con is now over and done. It's about 2:45 a.m. I guess it's now Saturday morning. And I had a pretty good time on day one. Basically, the highlights of the con were wandering around and buying stuff, which is always a good thing. I got myself Atomica issues 1 through 6, and I met up with some of the Comic Geek Speak guys and was able to get a t-shirt from them. So I have myself a Comic Geek Speak Con shirt. Yeehaw. And thanks to Brian for bringing that over, and thanks for the interview as well. And I hope to get some more interviews on day two, as day one was pretty much the get to know everybody and wander around day. Because considering that the con was basically only from 4 to 8 that day, technically, even though there was stuff that was happening after 8 o'clock, tomorrow's going to be the big day, and I cannot wait to see how crowded everything is going to be. And I had one hell of an experience today. I met up with a couple of friends, and we decided to get some dinner afterwards because it was about 9 o'clock and we hadn't eaten. And I'll talk about why we didn't eat until 9 o'clock after I tell the story here, because we went to see something, and I'm going to talk about that as well. But we got out of the restaurant after eating, and my friend fell and sprained her ankle. Well, actually, it was more sprain of a foot, and she was in a lot of pain, and I got to see the inside of an ambulance for the first time. So that was an interesting experience. But, you know, these type of things happen at a con, I guess, and which is kind of odd, because you usually expect these type of things to happen when you're not at home at a convention, considering that this is my home state. This is the New York Comic Con. But crazy things can happen sometimes, and that's basically what happens. So I spent from about, I'd say about 10 o'clock until about 2 at the hospital, as my friend Chris got her foot taken care of, and she's now walking with a cane, so she's got the house complex going pretty well. So hopefully she's going to be all right, and she probably will, but she might even be back on her feet to head over to the con tomorrow. But anyway, that's how I spent most of my night after I was done with the con. What we saw at the con before we went to get dinner was the screening, well, I guess not advanced anymore, considering that it is out pretty much everywhere now. The Ultimate Avengers movie was screened at New York Comic Con, and I had a lot to say about this, mostly because it was good, but it played like a pilot for an animated series, and I know that that's not what it is, so I'm a bit disappointed with it. Because I would have expected the animation to be a bit crisper. I would have imagined that they'd probably put a bit more work into it to make it feel like a movie as opposed to an extended pilot. But that's basically what it felt like. Also, the voice acting in it. There were some voice actors that really did not fit the roles too well. And mostly, to me, I would have to go with Tony Stark / Iron Man. The voice that they chose for that really did not fit him at all. Didn't seem to fit the character of Tony Stark in any way, and the voice filter they put on it when he put the suit on to become Iron Man was really sad. Also, for those who've seen it, I'm sure you noticed by now, they made Bruce Banner basically look just like Joe Pantoliano. It's actually kind of hilarious. They didn't get him to voice him. That would have been great. So basically, Bruce Banner's Joe Pantoliano and Nick Fury's Samuel L. Jackson. So there you go. And the most amazing thing of all is that Nick Fury, was not voiced by Samuel L. Jackson. I thought he was voiced by Phil LaMarr, because that's exactly what the voice sounded like to me. I mean, it was pretty much exactly the way Phil LaMarr sounds when he's voicing Jon Stewart on Justice League Unlimited. And I look at the credits, and it's not Jon Stewart, or Phil LaMarr, that is. It's some other dude doing a really, really good Phil LaMarr impression. So Marvel could not get Phil LaMarr. They couldn't get Samuel Jackson. They get a guy who sounds just like Phil LaMarr. I don't know. That feels a bit wrong to me. And also, there were some changes they made from the Ultimates to, I guess, maybe kiddie it a little bit, which didn't really fly too well for me. I mean, I understood what they were trying to do here, and it wasn't too terrible, but I really expected more. I'll give it like a 2.5 out of 5, maybe a 3. But it's definitely a rent. I don't know if it's an own. I guess if you're a real Marvel nut and you enjoy the Ultimates and enjoy the Avengers, I guess this will be for you. But to me, it was fun. But like I said, it was something I would have expected to found on TV, not on a DVD movie. So other than that, did a whole bunch of running around and finding some stuff to buy. Got myself the Killing Joke
which of course is one of Alan Moore's best stories ever, in a $2 bin. So I got that for pretty damn cheap. And I expect to spend more of my money as the days go on. So that's pretty much my wrap-up for day one. And day two is a couple hours away. And for you guys, it's going to be even less. So I'll put the mini disc away, and I am going to get some sleep. And I will hopefully get more interviews and get some more comments in for day two. So take care. Good night. And I will see you guys in the morning. But like I said, for you, it'll only be about 3 seconds. Good night. Well, Ian Levenstein here. It is day two of the New York Comic Con, and things are out of control. The con is completely sold out. You heard me, completely sold out for the rest of the weekend. Lines are out the door to get in, and currently there is a line spanning about halfway through a hallway to get into the exhibit area. When yesterday you were just able to basically walk in, now you got to wait on a line for about an hour and a half. I am going to try and get on that line because I have at least one interview lined up, possibly some more. I went to the Del Rey manga panel earlier, and I talked to one of the members of Del Rey manga, and I will hopefully be getting an interview with him around 5:30 today. And I just got out of a DC panel, and basically they weren't willing to give away anything, but one of the things they did mention is that there's only going to be one Flash come the end of 1 year later. And by the end of issue one, the Flash who starts that issue will not be the Flash that ends it. So that's kind of interesting there. Anyway, that's pretty much all I have for you right now. Hopefully I will have some interviews in the next couple of hours. And once again, it is an absolute madhouse here. So I'm going to put my microphone away for a little bit, eat myself some pizza, get myself online, and get ready to wait a while. So you'll be hearing from me in about a couple seconds because I keep forgetting. This is a damn podcast. It's sequential. I'm airing these all at the same time. See you in a bit. Okay. All right, Ian Levenstein here with Paul Levitz of DC Comics. Paul, how are you?
Utterly exhausted at the convention. Too many people, too much fun.
How's the con been treating you so far?
It's a great problem to have more people than you can fit into the room, but it is a bit of a challenge.
So what works do you have upcoming currently?
I have a series of Justice Society stories out now, which is the first time in a very long time I've got a body of writing work out. So it's kind of fun listening to people's reaction.
Are you going to be involved in the one year later at all? Or?
Yeah, my stories span the 1 year later jump in that particular book.
And what members of the JSA should we be expecting to see during this lovely 1 year later arc?
It's kind of a balance between the old and the new. I'm having a lot of fun with old friends like Flash and Green Lantern, Wildcat, and then enjoying getting to know Jakeem and Stargirl, who I never had a chance to write before, and some extra special fun with both Power Girl and Ma Hunkle.
Now, jumping ahead a year like this, it might be kind of, is it any difficult at all to write something as substantial as this, where, you know, parts of the story have not even been told yet?
On this particular book, the changes that were happening sort of worked okay for a guy who was dropping in and filling in as a guest writer.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Paul.
My pleasure. Have fun.
All right, great. Okay, I'm here with Dallas Mitta of Del Rey Books. They take care of science fiction, fantasy, and manga. And Dallas, what a con so far, huh?
Oh, it's been crazy, hasn't it? I mean, they've had hundreds of people waiting outside to come in.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're sold out for today, and they might even be sold out for tomorrow as well. It's just been absolutely crazy here. Right away, I'm going to switch it over to the manga side, because obviously you just had your panel on manga, and I got to sit through that. My main question to you to start things off would be, how close a relationship do you have with the original creators of the manga in Japan when you're translating it into English?
You know, actually, we don't have a very close relationship to the creators. We have a close relationship to the editors, which is almost the same thing. The editors work very, very closely with the mangaka in Japan, and anything that we do usually goes through them for approval.
Okay. Now, have you ever had an instance where in a translation you've gotten a complaint either from the editor or the original creator through the editor where, you know, they don't like the way something was translated or anything along those lines?
Well, it's a no. I can't make up a long answer for that one. No, that's never happened.
Well, I'm actually glad to hear that. Now, also, one thing, I don't know whether you would notice or not, I've heard on the internet that a second season of Genshiken has been approved, and it was announced at Comic Con 69 this year. I don't know if you've heard anything about that yet, but considering that you guys do publish the Genshiken manga, I'm wondering if you have, if I've just shocked your mind or if you knew about this ahead of time.
No, actually, I had no idea. I think that's fantastic news. I love Genshiken.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. Now, for the listeners, I mean, I know that I myself know what's coming up from the panel, but give us a quick run-through of what's coming up with the publishing schedule.
Sure, absolutely. Well, in the next week, we're going to be releasing the first volume of School Rumble, which is a great new book by Jin Kobayashi, combining, really, it's just a slapstick manga. It's really funny. It's great for, really shoots across for both boys and girls. Big release this year is going to be Air Gear by Oh Great. The anime for that is going to be debuting in Japan in April of this year. We're going to have that manga out at the end of June. And then we have a whole bunch of launches coming over the summer. We have ES by Fuyumi Soryo, who did Mars. Kyuko-chan by Hajime Ueda, who did Furikuri. Gundam Seed Destiny, the sequel to Gundam Seed. Kurogane by Kei Tomei. Really, really unusual samurai story. Really fun book. I actually didn't get a chance to talk about that one on the panel, now that I think about it. It's a great new book we've got coming.
Well, I'm glad that I talked to you then, so I was able to find out about it. Now, what is the general criteria for you getting a manga over from Japan and getting it over here? Do you look for popularity in Japan, or do you look for potential popularity here in America?
Well, really, it's a combination of both. There's no question that when a manga is very popular in Japan, it puts it on our radar. But not every manga that is popular in Japan is going to find an audience here in the United States. Nodame Cantabile, which sells well here, but in Japan it sells over 500,000 copies per volume. So, and we don't even come close to that. There's a title that they have called Jipang, which is this great story set during World War II about the Japanese Navy. Really big seller over there, not likely to find a market here.
Probably because it's the Japanese Navy and not the American Navy, but I don't know. That could be it. And being involved with manga as long as you have, what do you think is the main mitigating factor between manga becoming nearly as popular as it has over the past couple of years?
Well, really, I think that people are very interested in reading comic books. I think people have always been very interested in reading comics. It's just that for decades, the main thing that was available to them were Spider-Man and Batman and Superman. And superhero comics are difficult for people who don't read superhero comics to get into. Manga, on the other hand, even though it is read here in the U.S. from right to left, I think is very, very accessible. It's very accessible. You don't have to really... You don't have to know all about the characters. You have to know about just a few of the conventions. It's very easy to get into. It's a fantastic method of storytelling. And they're just some great books.
And also, I know that in Japan, there aren't nearly as many of those stereotypes that comics are just for kids or something along those lines. There's a whole bunch of different ranges of things that you can get into. And that's one thing that we don't really have over here in the States.
Right. Well, actually, I get asked that by people who don't really understand manga, especially in Hollywood. And what I try to tell them, to make them understand what manga is in Japan, is to say, you know, it's like television. And so when somebody asks me, you know, what's manga like? What's a typical genre for manga? My response to them is, would you ask that about TV? What's a typical genre for TV? There isn't one. There's nonfiction, there's drama, there's humor, there's science fiction, there's mystery, everything. There's stuff for people in their 50s and 60s. There's stuff for people who are, you know, kids who are 3 years old. Manga is the same way in Japan.
All right, and one final question. Obviously, since this is a podcast based on the internet, what would be your website, and what kind of things can people find on the website?
Well, the website would be www.delraymanga.com. And probably the biggest thing that we have on our website these days is we've been doing 30-page previews of our new books. So a number of those books that I mentioned just a moment ago will be available on the website for people to take a look at before they come out in the stores.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dallas.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So there you have it. There's Dallas Mitta, and hopefully I'll have more from the con as time goes on. Well, guys, day two of the con is officially over now. Just got myself home about, I'd say, about 30 minutes ago. It's now about 10 to 3 on, I guess, technically Sunday morning. And what a day it was. I was running around more today than I was yesterday, to say the least. And boy, oh boy, was everything crowded. I was able to make it into the Marvel Comics Civil War panel and got a bit of information on that. Mostly the people who are going to be involved, and pretty much everybody in the Marvel Universe is going to be involved in Civil War in one way or another, even those that are going to be involved with Planet Hulk and Annihilation in small ways are going to be associated with Civil War, and got confirmation that issue 8 of She-Hulk is the issue that everybody should be picking up if they are fans of the New Warriors, as apparently they're going to play a huge role in that particular issue, and also a major status quo change will be happening in that issue for She-Hulk. So, interested to see what that status quo change will be, and interested to see what Civil War is going to be as well. I know that I put it down a bit on the show, but now that I've actually, you know, seen the creators talking about it and seen their enthusiasm about it, I'm willing to see how it turns out before I put it down completely. Also, got to be at the DC panel, as I mentioned previously, and now that I've been thinking about it a bit more, really didn't reveal too much at the panel, because obviously they really couldn't, but I guess really, like I mentioned before, the only real thing that they did actually confirm is that there's only going to be one Flash around, at least in that particular issue, of Flash that comes out 1 year later. And by the end of that issue, we'll have a different Flash. So I'm very curious to see what that actually is going to be about. Very curious to see what the situation is going to be with that. I've got an interview lined up for tomorrow already. Scott Meltzer, the creator of This Is Otakuidom and the brand new STEAM. That's an acronym for, I don't even know offhand, STEAM. And I'm going to be having an interview with him after his panel on fan parodies, which is basically going to be at the end of the con. So I'm going to have an interview with him at about 5 o'clock tomorrow. And I'm also going to try and get some interviews with some other creators as I walk around trying to get myself some back issues and brand new comics. Got myself the run of Teen Titans, which seemed to have magically gone missing. Not entirely sure why it did, but it was issues 16, 17, and 18 of the recent Geoff Johns run, which was basically the arc where they went into the future, and I don't know how it got misplaced, but it just seemed to disappear from my collection. So I was able to pick those up in the back issue bins, and also picked up Emo Boy number 1 and 2, and I'll make sure to talk about that on the show once I am done reading them. And another great thing that I was able to go to today was the Anime Parliament. Now, what the Anime Parliament is a bunch of guys sitting around making accusations and making court cases out of anime situations. For example, Paladin Alexander Anderson stealing the hair gel recipe from Vash the Stampede. That's the one that I suggested, and there were a couple other ones that were a lot of fun as well. And it was a lot of fun, period. I'm really glad that it happened, and I cannot wait to go to the one at Anime Next as well, because this is a regular thing that they do at a bunch of different conventions, and it was a pretty decent turnout. The one thing, though, is that it's obviously a comic convention, so not a lot of people, compared to the amount of people that show up at the anime convention, showed up at the Comic-Con. So, pretty interesting situation with that, but, you know, enough people showed up. We had a great time, and a lot of people ended up clearing out by the end of the fan parodies, but I got to see a lot of interesting fan parodies. One in particular was done with basically a whole bunch of splicing. This was done back in the days before even computers were part of the fan parodies. It was basically just spliced in footage of Captain Harlock and Star Wars, which was really, really odd. And also watched the, I can't even see how many zeros this is, but it's like 60, trillion, gazillion, trillion, I don't even know, Funky Chicken, which was basically about Bash the Stampede being chased around by Spike Spiegel of Cowboy Bebop, which was hilarious. They even spliced in some quirks into that. And we watched Evangelion Redeath Redux, which is the redo. A lot of re's on that, but that's the redo of Evangelion Redeath with better footage and better audio quality, which is very noticeable. It's so much better now. And got to see Steam, the brand new thing from the guys who did the Zertakadam. Again, I'll have an interview with Scott Meltzer and the rest of the gang after tomorrow's show. So, one more day left. I'll be up bright and early getting to the show floor as soon as I can possibly get there, and I'll hopefully get to a couple panels tomorrow and hopefully get a couple more books. So I will be filing one more report from day three, and hope you guys enjoy the report so far, as you'll have at least two or three more things to hear from me on day three. So until day three, I'm getting some sleep. Good night, everybody. All right, I'm here at day three of New York Comic Con now, and I'm here with Chris Staros of Top Shelf Productions. Chris, how's the con been treating you so far?
Man, it's been great. You know, New York Comic Con launched really hard. Where a lot of people showed up. So many people, they had to turn them away, you know. So you get the feeling as an exhibitor here, you think, wow, you know, why is this only the first year I've showed up here? And you realize, oh, it's because it's the first year they did the show. It just has a real established feeling already, like it's been here a while. So I'm really glad to see them get off to such a good start, and we're happy to be here, and it's a good show.
I'm glad to see that they've already announced the next year's show, so it looks like they're at least going to be here for at least next year, so that's definitely a plus.
Yeah, and from what I understand, they're going to double the size of the hall and make the aisles wider, and so the kind of the bottlenecks they've experienced this year, they're going to get over that. You know, and the other cool thing about the show is that, you know, like San Diego, which is, you know, the big show, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes people here because there's so much publishing, there's so much Hollywood, there's so much other things in New York that a lot of people are running through here. Like, there's a lot of librarians here on Friday and things of that nature where you're getting to do a lot of behind-the-scenes work at the show as well. So it's been nice.
So tell us a little bit about Top Shelf.
Well, Top Shelf is one of the larger independent press publishers. It primarily focuses on, you know, literary graphic novels, mostly known for The Book from Hell by Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell, and also the book Blankets by Craig Thompson and Andy Runton's Owly series. You know, these are the things that kind of we're known for. But we put out about 40 graphic novels a year. And at this show, at the New York Comic Con, we're lucky to have Alex Robinson here of Box Office Poison and Tricked, which are our really big selling graphic novels, Aaron Rainier of Spiral Bound, and also Liz Prince of Will You Still Love Me If I Wet the Bed. And they've been signing autographs and doing sketches all weekend, so...
It's funny, as soon as you said From Hell, right away it clicked in my mind. Oh, yeah, I knew I heard you guys before, so there you go.
Yeah, so anyway, we're having a lot of fun. And this summer, you know, speaking of From Hell, we're doing another big Alan Moore book this summer that's coming out in July, and that's Alan Moore's Lost Girls. I don't know if you've heard of Lost Girls or not, but Alan and his girlfriend Melinda have been working on this book for the last 20 years behind the scenes. And it is Alan's, this book has never been done before, something like this. It's Alan's attempt to reinvent pornography as something very literary, thoughtful, and humane. And it is an absolutely astounding book. It's going to be three cloth-bound volumes with dust jackets and a slipcase, all sold at the same time, oversized like the absolute editions of Watchmen and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And it'll be out this summer, and it's going to be controversial, it's going to be bold, and it's probably be the book that we will be known most for in our entire publishing career as something of merit.
Now, do you guys just go for the controversial stuff, or do you have a wide range of books?
Yeah, actually, the opposite, in the sense that most of the stuff we do is just extremely accessible. Like, the independent press often is, you know, stigmatized as like, oh, they're all weirdos and everything and elitist and don't like the mainstream stuff. And Top Shelf's never been like that. Yeah, we're kind of a hip outfit, and we design our books cool and we package stuff nice, but we don't have any attitude about it. We're very friendly. We're very accessible. We love the mainstream stuff. We love Batman and Spider-Man and all these kind of things. It's just that's not our niche. You know, we can't compete with Marvel and DC at their game. They own that game. So we got to do something different. And we chose to do things with a little more heart and a little more humor. And our stuff is more akin to literature and film, you know, because film just doesn't deal with superheroes. It deals with all kinds of different subjects and topics. So if you like seeing a wide variety of films, you'd probably like reading a wide variety of Top Shelf books, because we cover such the gamut of personal and social issues and things like that.
Now, what variety of people have you seen coming up here? All ages, or more of the older crowd?
It's been all over the place. You know, the one thing about the comics community over the last 5 years is, in a lot of ways, it's really matured and broadened, because when you see the growth of the population at San Diego and so forth, you see a lot more families, you see a lot more women, and people who are really knowledgeable about comics, not like they just got dragged along by their boyfriend. You know, they know what they want to buy and they know what they're into. And some of our books, like Spiral Bound and Owlie, tend to really truly be all ages books, and they appeal to women and children and men and comics fans. So we kind of see all kinds at our booth.
Do you guys have a website?
Yes, the website is topshelfcomics.com, COMIX, so topshelfcomics.com. And if you live in the New York area, if you're around here with the cons, you could see our books at Jim Hanley's Universe, Forbidden Planet, Midtown Comics, you know, get the books there too.
All right, great. All right, well, thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you very much.
All right, so there you have it. There's Chris Staros, and hopefully more interviews to come. Okay, I'm here with Jesse Bausch, writer of Strange Detective Tales, Dead Love. Jesse, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well myself. Been one hell of a con, a crazy con at that, especially considering the fire squad yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Strange Detective Tales.
Well, the basic concept behind the story is that back in the 30s to the 40s, when they started making all the monster movies in Hollywood, all the monsters started moving to Hollywood to kind of try and sell their stories and get rich. But they all got ripped off by Hollywood executives, so there's sort of like this entire underclass of you know, different sorts of monsters that are living in L.A. right now. Renfield from Dracula and Igor from Frankenstein are sort of like, become sort of private detectives to sort of help out this sort of underclass of monsters that live in L.A. And so it sort of goes from there. The sort of storyline for Dead Love is sort of, you know, sort of a classic noir thing. It's sort of, you know, Renfield chasing after a lost love, and sort of interesting things result from that.
Have you been into horror comics since you were a kid?
Yeah, very much. Horror comics, horror movies, all that sort of stuff.
How graphic is the comic? Is it more of an adult theme book?
It is somewhat more adult themed. It's not. There's no graphic sex or especially graphic violence. There are some exceptionally gross monsters. That's about as graphic as it gets, at least for the first two issues. So, yeah.
And how long have you had this idea in your head before you actually got it down on paper?
I've been working on it since maybe... Well, I came up with sort of the original idea of sort of Renfield and Igor in sort of a buddy pitcher sort of thing, at least maybe 6 years ago or something like that. But then the sort of the concept really sort of came together when Jim and I started talking about doing stuff, and that was maybe around 3 or 4 years ago.
So how much of a benefit do you think this convention has been on sales for the book?
Oh, it's been great. We've really, there's been a lot of folks out, and it's good. You know, last year was the first time I actually got to go to, you know, like San Diego. Like, we've done plenty of other the sort of more regional and smaller cons, but this is the first one that we've been to that's sort of like getting to that sort of caliber, sort of like almost sort of San Diego scope. So it's been great.
And what other works have you done in the past?
Most of the other stuff that I've done has been sort of through Odd God Press, some of the anthology books that we've done. And then I did a couple of just online sort of comic things.
And these are available through the website? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. And the website would be?
Website is www.oddgodpress.com.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jesse.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, there you have it. There was the New York Comic Con in all 3 days of its beautiful glory. Now, I had recorded a wrap-up of day 3, but it didn't seem to get saved on the mini-disc, so I'll give a quick wrap-up of day 3 here for you guys right now. Now, I was lucky enough to get into one of the panels, which basically had three of the greatest art legends
in the history of comic books. Jim Lee, who obviously is known for his X-Men work and his work on Wildcats and Batman, and now All-Star Batman and Robin, which even every great creator has one crappy book every now and then. Anyway, Jim Steranko, who is without a doubt one of the best comic book artists of our time and of any time, and Neil Adams, who really doesn't need any introduction. Everybody pretty much knows Neil Adams, who has been involved in comics. And what their main interest was letting everybody know the state of comic book art in today's society. Now, they have seen a lot of portfolios in their day. And what seems to be the going trend of artists in today's society is that a lot of people think all they have to do is look at a couple comics and start drawing stuff and they'll be accepted to Marvel, DC, or some independent. And Neil Adams, who was probably the most prominent on this, made it perfectly clear that if you're going to do art, you're going to have to eat, sleep, breathe, and go to the bathroom with your art. And pardon the go to your bathroom part, but that's pretty much what you got to do. Your entire life needs to revolve around art in order to become a good artist. And it takes more than just looking at comic books. You're going to have to go out in real life situations and just start sketching. You're going to have to roll out of bed and go right to that art pad. You're going to have to sleep regularly as opposed to pulling an all-nighter to get a deadline done. Get your rest and you'll be just as fast in the morning. And he even said, damn the deadlines, which was probably the most shocking thing he said. But I guess that was to prove that great art needs no deadline. So if you're a great artist, you can avoid those deadlines. And Brian Hitch, I'm thinking of you. But also, Jim Steranko and Jim Lee had a lot to say, but Neil Adams definitely stole the show. And there were a couple other things that they brought up, mostly the fact that the great artists out there now, like the David Finches, the Brian Hitches, they prove that it doesn't take a lot of lines to get art done properly. All you got to do is just draw detail. And an artist that draws a breathtaking picture in 50 lines will be a better artist than the one that draws a breathtaking picture in 200 lines, because it'll have just that more power. And a lot of people believe today the more lines, the better. But that is not what Neil Adams, Steranko, or Lee believe. And they made that perfectly clear as the panel concluded. Now, the other panel I made it to was the fan parody panel, which actually went longer than it was supposed to go. And that was basically because of the nice staff. It was the last panel of the day. It was from 4 to 5, and they let it run until about 5:20 or 5:30 or so. And it was absolutely hilarious. Basically, Scott Melzer and all the other members of This is Otakudom / Steam, well, three of the members, that is, were there. And by the way, I have an interview with these three members, and that interview will be airing over the weekend. It's a full hour, so I figure I might as well save it for a special episode. So the release schedule for GeekSpeak over the next couple of days will look like this. This episode, obviously, is episode 24, which will be released, as usual, on Thursday, as you can probably tell, considering that you're listening to it right now. And after that, on Sunday, I will be releasing the special, I guess, extended con edition, that's what I'll call it, which basically just has the hour-long interview with the This is Otakudom / Steam guys. And on Tuesday, I will be putting out the Showcase Spotlight, which will be all about American animation. I'll be filming that, well, I'll be recording that on Friday, but I'll be releasing it on Tuesday. So I'll have pretty much a Comic Geek Speak schedule lined up for a little while. So you guys will be nice and happy with the special episodes. And I guess consider this a long episode 25 celebration. Nice 3-episode run and a whole bunch of extra material. But anyway, I went to the fan parody panel and they showed a couple of fan parodies, beginning with one that was done back in the days before computers were even a part of the equation. And this one might have been primitive, but oh boy, was it funny. And they showed one, it was actually a Voltron. And Voltron basically was done, well, this fan parody of Voltron was done with two VCRs. That's all they needed, two VCRs and a microphone. Now that is amazing. It's really amazing how such primitive technology still managed to be so damn funny. They also show one of my favorite fan parodies of all time, which was actually an anime music video, Tainted Donuts, which was the first one to put Vash and Spike in the same music video. They made Cowboy Bebop and Trigun feel like the exact same anime, and oh my dear God, is this the most gorgeous thing ever. I'm going to actually link to the animemusicvideo.org link for Tainted Donuts if I can get around to it. You do need to register for animemusicvideos.org, but if you donate, you get to waive the waiting period before you can actually start downloading things. If not, I believe it only takes a week until you can actually start downloading things, which is not too terrible. But anyway, also they showed a couple of fan trailers that were made, basically recutting some footage to make it seem like it was the audio to a movie. And they even replaced some subs and made things look crazy. Love, Slave, Kotora. That's all I have to say. It was a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that I went to this one because it was a great way to round up the con. You know, some nice, funny stuff, and funny is good. I love me some funny, and that's certainly what it was. I left around 6 o'clock, or I guess, or somewhere along those lines, and as I was leaving, looking at that empty convention hall, looking at the Javits Center, I got a bit sad for a little bit there. It was really a great time, and I'm totally glad I got to experience it. And while I was going around the dealer's area, before I went to the panels, I was lucky enough to get a professional sketch, $30 well spent, by Todd Knock. And for those of you who don't know who Todd Knock is, he is the man behind Young Justice, Peter David's Young Justice, which was the precursor to the current Teen Titans being done by Geoff Johns. And his art was pretty much what got me into DC Comics in the first place. When I was a teenager, I related to Young Justice really, really well. I wanted to meet him for a long time, and I was lucky enough to meet him now. He does Wild Guard, and there are a couple of miniseries out of that. His website is currently down, but when it comes back up, you're actually able to buy the issues of Wild Guard directly from Todd Knock. And at most conventions, him and his wife actually set up an area where they're just selling their books. He has a couple old Young Justice stuff and a couple old Wild Guard stuff, and it's pretty damn nice. And he drew me one of the most gorgeous Kid Flash sketches I could have possibly imagined to have. And wow, that's really the only thing I can say about it. Thank you so much to Todd Knock. Very, very nice guy, too. As he was drawing it, we had a nice conversation. And he let me know that he will actually be drawing an issue of 52. I believe he said it would be issue 11, and he's going to be involved in the art on issue 12, or it could be reverse of that. But one of those issues, Todd Knock will be drawing. And hearing that just makes me want to pick up 52 even more. Because when the creators you love do new things, you got to go out there and support them. And I certainly support Todd Knock, and I'll certainly be picking up Wild Guard as soon as his website comes back up. And also picked up a couple of other scattered things here and there. All in all, it was a great weekend. I can't wait for next year because next year, according to a lot of sources, they're actually going to be moving the weekend that the con takes place so that they'll actually be able to have more room to get this thing going. So there will be no problems with people getting in next year. So they're probably going to end up getting more of the Javits Center, more of that area that they did not utilize the last time around. Expand the space, expand the aisles, and make it safer and more secure and allow more people in. So New York Comic Con year 2 is pretty much a year away. I can't wait for it because I had so much fun at this one. And I might actually try and get down to Baltimore Comic Con in September. Not only because the CGS guys will be there, but also because, well, damn it, I love this convention. And I got to get myself to another one. Comic conventions are wow. That's the best way to put it. I'd only been to anime conventions before this, and now that I've been to a comic convention, I need to go to more. And I might actually also try to go down to Baltimore for Otakon, but that's up in the air. I'll let you guys know if I actually am going to do that, because I will try to get some interviews from people at every convention I go to, because I love talking to people, and I love getting stuff for GeekSpeak. So, definitely, I will give this con a rousing 5 out of 5. wonderful first experience, and I can't wait to have my second experience sometime in the near future. New York Comic Con, you get a rousing review, and even the shirt turned out looking pretty cool, even if I know that this spider armor will probably only be around for a year or so. Hey, come on, I had to put at least one negative thing in there. It's me, for God's sakes. It's wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And thank God, the Olympics are finally over. Oh my God. I mean, it's one thing to have an event that's entertaining and is full of a lot of different things to do. But the main problem with the Olympics is that it just sucked. I'm sorry. I mean, there was so little to entertain me that I couldn't watch. And a lot of the times I can find at least one sport to hold on to, but I just could not find that sport this time around. Now, even hockey, both the American team and the Canadian team probably had their worst performances in the past 12 years of the Olympics, or possibly even more than that. Sweden ended up winning, mostly due to the wonderful, wonderful play of Lundqvist. And luckily, he came out unscathed and probably just better experience for him. So the Rangers are definitely happy that their goalie got himself a gold medal. Congratulations to the Swedes. And the Finland also. Finland blew everybody away. Nobody expected Finland to do anything, and they made it to the medal round, and great job for them. Curling. Yeah, I got to mention curling again. Curling, surprisingly enough, got my interest in some ways, only because I really started to realize that a game that's a combination of pool and bocce and shuffleboard can actually be sort of fun at times. You wouldn't think that, especially considering the sports that I'm usually into, but that was one of them. And, you know, when you have nothing else doing in your life, okay, when you're tired and you just want to go to bed and you don't want to get off the couch, and you turn on NBC, and there's some curling going on, you're going to watch it. It's as simple as that. And they usually put it on late at night, because that's the way things work. So you got late-night curling. I seriously never thought I'd say those words in my life. Late-night curling. It sounds like something that two girls would do in a slumber party, not a sport, doesn't it? But that's what was going on. And hey, you know, I guess I'll sign up for curling the next time around, too. But the figure skating was a disappointment. The snowboarding was sort of fun. The skiing was a disappointment. And even the bobsledding, which I'm usually really into, I could not get into this time around. So I'm really hoping that the next Winter Olympics are better than this one. I really hope that they learn from their mistakes. And considering that the next one will actually be in the U.S., we'll be watching live stuff. So we're not going to have to worry about hearing the results about 6 hours before they air on television, which happened a lot this time around. So the Olympics are over. Let's get back to real sports, shall we? It's only about a couple of weeks until April. And that World Baseball Classic is happening soon, too. So that could be kind of good. Maybe. A bit. When's opening day again? I need baseball. Give me baseball. Please? Please? That was the wind-up. Now here's the pitch. Every single Monday from 3 to 4 here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you can hear me, Ian Levenstein, along with Jason Green, Joey Maggs, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln, the ghost of George Washington, and the ghost of Don Knotts. May he rest in peace. On the Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. The forums have been getting a bit more active lately, so That's a nice thing to see. And don't forget to vote for GeekSpeak on Podcast Alley. The link is at the front page of the GeekSpeak website, and I hope you'll click on that. And don't forget to spread the word. All right, so there you have it. That was the Comic-Con edition of GeekSpeak, episode 24. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you on Sunday for the special edition of GeekSpeak with the This Is Otakerdom guys, and then on Tuesday for the Showcase Spotlight, and then back on Thursday for episode 26. Take care, everybody. I'll see you next time. Sneezed. Excellent. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.